Meteor with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello. Welcome to the Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio. I'm very excited. I'm happy to be here. It is your broadcast premiere on April 30th, 2022. For those of you in other time zones, it is still April 30th, I believe. I don't believe it's anywhere across the threshold. My name is Mark Morano. I am a investigative journalist, chiefly here in Washington, D.C. based, and I am looking forward to this weekly radio show. We are going to be challenging the consensus views. One of the titles from the working titles for this show was going to be Question Authority. Because if you think back to the 1960s, the 1970s, what was the establishment of investigative journalism but questioning the organs of power, questioning the narratives, questioning the claims of the media, questioning the claims of the Pentagon, questioning the claims of the presidency, questioning the claims of Congress. Instead, what we have now in the 2022, globally, around the world, journalism has now morphed into this horrible scenario where their entire existence is settling the science, settling the narrative, defending big government institutions, and any voice of dissent, any challenge to that narrative, to that authority, to those facts, are literally shut down. They are literally seen as a threat. They're labeled misinformation, disinformation. And now, of course, we have entire government agencies with a lot of police armed to police that, to enforce that narrative. So anyone tuning in thinking this is going to just be your typical boring public policy matter discussion, not going to happen. I'm going to go deep into the matters. I'm going to focus a lot. My background as an investigative journalist has been about environmental issues. First off, I deal with climate, energy, the environment. And I'll give you my background here in a moment, but essentially, I'm now expanding that reach. We are now going, my new book is called The Great Reset, and that's coming out in August of 2022. And I will be expanding this now to be talking about all sorts of additional issues, such as government, inflation, debt, digital dollars, privacy, big tech censorship, and essentially intellectual rule, because intellectuals actually believe if they're in charge, they can rule our lives better than anyone else. And if we are left, the unwashed masses in charge of our life, we will be the ones who create racism, inequity, a climate crisis, that we have to be managed and essentially monitored and boxed in, if you will, to every aspect of our life controlled by an administrative state. Now, who am I? I sound like Admiral Ross Perot's running mate, whose name I can't remember at the moment, but he ran in 1992, Admiral Stockdale. I will be delivering this news and commentary. I'm going to be a fusion of politics, entertainment, and we're going to go through everything on the docket in the news today, from the Ukraine to COVID lockdowns to vaccine mandates to censorship to cultural issues to transgender issues to critical race theory. And I actually hope to have liberals and progressives and people who disagree on the show. I want to include open discussion. I'm going to bring you fascinating interviews. I'm going to give you great sound bites and clips. I'm going to give you breaking news and commentary. But essentially, my background, I started out as essentially, in 1980, I worked as a volunteer for Ronald Reagan's presidency in the fall of 1980, at the age of 11, going on 12. I was about a month away from my 12th birthday. I went with my older brother, Tom, and we went to the Reagan headquarters in Arlington, Virginia. And this is where I got my first taste of the fusion, if you will, of government and, of politics and entertainment, politics and media, politics and journalism. I was in charge of, well, first of all, they had a Ronald Reagan signatory pen that was there. It was a mechanical pen that you'd put paper on, and it would sign documents in a Ronald Reagan's official signature. And that was a lot of fun for an 11-12-year-old to sit there and play with a mechanical pen. You could do all kinds of fun things. Anyway, but my chief job was at these at volunteering for Ronald Reagan's 1980 presidential campaign was not just stuffing envelopes and organizing and helping out around the office, but they, for some reason, put me in charge of Ronald Reagan's sound bites. And these sound bites, and who was then Governor Reagan, they gave me a list of radio and TV news stations across the country. And I believe at the time I was dealing with like Michigan, Midwest stations. And I was to call up these producers and say, I have Governor Reagan's soundbite on Jimmy Carter's latest inflation or unemployment statistics. And it would be a 30-second, 45-second clip. And it was an old, I believe it was some kind of 8-track, I'm not even sure. I don't think it was reel-to-reel from my memory, but it was some kind of cartridge that I would then play the audio over to the producer, and they would then get the Ronald Reagan, the then Governor Reagan soundbite. Well, I did this for, you know, the last 2 months of that campaign, and it really was eye-opening to me. It was a great experience, and it sort of merged the two of politics and media for me, and that set off my interest in that. So from there, I always said I was a Republican except when it came to environmental issues. So what do I mean by that? Well, when Ronald Reagan was president, I always said I like Reagan, but I don't like what he's doing in the environment. I didn't like Interior Secretary James Watt. I didn't like putting in the logging roads. I always thought of the endangered species. I was worried about the trees. I always grew up, when I took the surveys in elementary school, it always said I was going to be a forest ranger. And I always liked the idea of being out in the woods in a cabin and out hiking. And so what happened was I actually became a Republican environmentalist. And of course, that at the time, even that didn't even ring true. I think later it became a Republican conservationist because, you know, Republicans aren't allowed to be environmentalists. And technically, environmentalist is a progressive movement that always seeks government command and control and regulations on every aspect of your life, regardless of the environmental issue. But essentially, from then on, I went through the Reagan years, and it really wasn't until 1991, 92, when I started re-examining environmental issues. A big part of that was Dixie Lee Ray, the former nuclear physicist who was the governor, I believe, of Washington State. She went down during the Rio Earth Summit. And I wasn't quite sure what to make of that Rio Earth Summit at the time, but I was listening to Rush Limbaugh's radio show. And she was calling in with regular reports. And I started reading her writings, talking about, for instance, at the time that the Amazon rainforest was the least endangered, most intact forest on the planet. And it really piqued my interest because I had watched all of the National Geographic documentaries. I had watched the Hollywood propaganda on it. I was aware of that issue specifically, the trees, save the trees. And I remember being shocked, and I started investigating that. Well, years later, actually, like my interest in the Amazon grew and grew. I ended up doing a documentary on the Amazon rainforest, Clear Cutting the Myths, which I started shooting in 98. It came out in early 2020. But essentially, what I was able to find was exactly what Dixie Lee Ray had said, the nuclear physicist, that essentially it is the most intact forest. When they talk about 10, 5, 50 acres of rainforest being chopped a minute and disappearing, and you know the size of France every, you know, whatever stat, they always made up just endless stats to scare people. I went down, I interviewed the scientists on the ground in Brazil. I went down with a team from American Investigator, my colleague Scott Wheeler, producer Kent Washburn, and we were able to talk to the indigenous people. We were able to literally turn the whole narrative on its head, even indigenous people saying that Sting, who was famous at the time for doing the rainforest concerts every year in New York. In fact, that's when I first met President Donald Trump. I interviewed him at a Sting rainforest concert, and that would have been in, I believe it was 1999, probably spring of 99. And I actually asked him about the Sting rainforest, but that was where all the celebrities, that was the celebrity cause du jour at the time at those events. And they were annual Sting rainforest concert. But essentially the rainforest, even the New York Times admitted years later, for every acre cut, 50 are being regenerated. People are leaving the jungles and swamps and wetlands and going into suburban areas. Slash and burn agriculture is being better regulated, less demand for it as people leave. And we have something called new forestry techniques that literally can go in and log a forest area, and you won't be able to tell the difference between logged in unlogged areas between plant and animal species within 7 years using these techniques. Instead of clearing big swaths of forest, they can cut little sections and then everything can cross-pollinate and populate and regrow. And within 7 years, according to these studies, you can't tell the difference. So there's so much hopeful news and environmental news. But I don't want to dwell too much on that part, but I just wanted to finish that out. From that, from listening to Rush Limbaugh, I ended up actually working for Rush Limbaugh. So we're back now in 1991. I met Rush Limbaugh at a Washington, D.C. event. I began working for him in 1992. And it was I went to both the Democrat and Republican conventions in 92. Republican convention was in Houston. And the Democrat convention, who I believe was in New York City that year, and it was. That was the year Bill Clinton was nominated. But anyway, I went around and asked people all these questions for Rush Limbaugh, including stuff like, what do you think of Rush Limbaugh moving from radio to TV? This was for his TV show. I became known as our man in Washington for Rush Limbaugh. I had a 4-year run with his TV show, which was actually very highly rated, but sort of the way today tries to cancel and shadow banned people on social media. Rush Limbaugh's TV show was essentially shadow banned. He was on in many great markets at a great time, but as the syndicated market grew for other shows, they kept pushing them to later at night, and it was seen as, oh, that show and station managers, he was on at 1:30, 2:30 in the morning or early morning, 6-7 in the morning. And so what happened was it just became a hassle. And I don't think Rush's heart was ever into the TV show. But after 4 years, I my claims to fame for Rush Limbaugh's TV show were having my camera stolen at the Clinton White House in 1993, seized during the Clinton Health Initiative. And also I was kicked out of Democratic fundraiser a few years later. But I covered the entire political scene for Rush Limbaugh. I was even outed as a Rush Limbaugh reporter by a White House correspondent who literally was just so resentful. I would go up to people and ask questions, not even sometimes identifying myself, because if I said Rush Limbaugh, they'd recoil. But I interviewed John Ritter, the actor who was doing a TV show called Hearts of Fire at the time. And this was at the National Press Club. And this White House, it was actually a White House photographer, whispered in John Ritter's ear that I was with Rush Limbaugh's show. And John Ritter said, "You're with Limbaugh, come on over here." And he challenged Rush Limbaugh to come on his TV show. And Rush Limbaugh later did and actually talked about it and the whole challenge. And Rush Limbaugh had a big acting gig on Hearts of Fire with John Ritter at the time. So that was a lot of fun doing those 4 years. I got to see the other side of Washington. I got to see firsthand from 1992 to 1996 what it was like to be essentially a non-establishment reporter in Washington. Now, it's gotten much, 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 much worse. But during that time, it was an amazing thing to watch because there was still that groupthink, the establishment of all of these media types who basically surrounded at the time. It was President Clinton, and the surveys were showing 97% of the reporters all supported Clinton. But anyway, I even got to interview Rush Limbaugh a few times when he'd come to Washington, D.C. for his show. And I got to do acting jobs and, you know, different things with the TV show. So that was a hoot. From there, I went on to American Investigator, which was a nationally syndicated 60-minute style, low budget news magazine show. And that is actually where I did a whole series of environmental reports on everything from wetlands, endangered species, debunking the myths, showing you the other side, that the government agencies and environmental groups and the whole media and academia just like to, again, like to cover up. By the way, I was, yeah, that's a book in the 1980s about everything I learned in kindergarten. Well, everything I learned during the climate environmental debate, because all the same tactics we're seeing today on every issue were all honed and practiced significantly in the environmental issues beginning in the 1980s into the 90s. And that's where I cut my teeth on those. So anyway, from there, I went to work for Brent Bozell's Media Research Center, a Cybercast news service. So I was an investigative reporter, covered DC, Washington political scene, and started covering climate change a lot more. And then from there, I went to work in the United States Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. And I was the communications director under Senator James Inhofe, Oklahoma, who's actually still in office, and he's just actually retiring this year in 2022. If you don't believe one man can make a difference, I submit to you Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma. He stood up alone against cap and trade legislation sponsored by Republicans like John McCain and Lindsey Graham. He stood up alone against President Obama, he was willing to challenge the scientific narrative, the United Nations climate panel, the media. He would go on CNN and debate the anchors. Back when CNN actually had debates, back when cable news had debates. So what happened was Senator James Inhofe literally rewrote the entire script on climate change for Republicans. He did multiple, I want to say it was like 8 or 9 1 hour plus floor speeches. I wrote a lot of those speeches. And we also did I think one of the key things that came out of the U.S. Environment, Senate and Public Works Committee at Senator Inhofe's urging, and he read parts of this on the Senate floor, and we released this with a U.S. Senate seal, a report of 400 dissenting scientists, and then, you know, I think it was 700, and then eventually 600, and then 750. Eventually, it broke 1,000. But the idea is these were scientists, international scientists from around the world, and this was their dissent on man-made climate change. And that's what was, which was amazing. So what happened was these scientists reached out to our office. We reached out to them. We got their previously published comments. We collected it into a 300 plus page report and we released it. And that was the shot heard around the world because scientists, even from other countries, were reading this report and saying, you know, I always thought that the consensus was true, but now that I'm seeing my colleagues not supporting this, we had former UN scientists, we had Nobel Prize winning scientists. So anyway, that is one of the things we did on that. So I got to check here. I'm hearing from my producer. We got to cut to an ad here. We'll be back. I'm going to finish up with my bio. Then I'm going to give you sort of another layout of what I'm going to be talking about. And we're going to talk about some recent events here and the Great Reset coming up. So this is TNT Radio. This is the Mark Morano Show, the broadcast premiere. This is the pilot episode. So it can only get better from here. Thank you for listening. And we'll be right back after this message.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
I thought, well, that's kind of like the end of the war. And then there was another piece that I saw in, I believe it was the Jerusalem Post, which said that two sides are still talking at very high levels. So what I'm wondering is, why am I having to look for that kind of information? Why isn't that top of mind during the newscasts who are instead focusing on refugees and crying babies wrapped in Ukrainian flags waiting at the border? I mean, it would seem to me that those concessions by Zelensky might be a game changer.
Well, yes, but it's a game changer that doesn't favor the current geopolitical, should we say, motivations and aims of the U.S. at the moment.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's not just a music box. It's a ballerina's castle. It's a place to keep special things. It's noticing the letter. It's hearing it's for her mom. It's the moment you realize a 10-year-old girl has come to terms with her terminal illness. It's telling her how brave she is. It's agreeing to pass the letter on after she's gone. It's not just a music box. It's one of the most important tools we use. Social work with children and families is changing. Join us. Call 0300 123 1220 or search Be The Difference.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio. Live, the inaugural broadcast, Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Mark your calendars. All right. So I was just giving you a little bit of background information for this pilot episode. So I work for the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. From there, and also I had been attending, as actually years before every United Nations Climate Summit and Earth Summit, beginning in 2002. So absent maybe two or three, I've been to every single one. And I mean every single one, meaning Rio de Janeiro, ones in Cancun, it runs in Bali, ones in multiple ones in Africa, South America, all over Europe. And these conferences, I became, you know, my favorite conference was in 2016, right after President Trump's election. I went and I wore a red MAGA hat just for effect. And I started shredding the UN Paris Climate Agreement outside of the media center where people were doing stunts all week long. And the, you know, people were horrified. They immediately sent over armed United Nations cops over to me. And I was literally, me and Craig Rucker, the head of CFAC, we were literally thrown out of the conference center. This was in Marrakesh. And we literally were thrown out, and we literally had to walk about a half a mile in the desert. We were thrown out of this conference center, and we had, and they not only, after they threw me out and I walked through the sand and went out to this giant parking lot, this was a temporary building out in the middle of nowhere in Marrakesh, Morocco. Then they sent the armed climate cops back out, and they seized my briefcase that had my all my papers in it. And then they stripped us of our badges and basically booted us from the conference for, you know, some kind of technical violation, not getting a permit. But, you know, a lot of, no one else needed a permit. It was very selectively enforced. Anyway, we later got back the following year. We were to get back into the United Nations climate summits, but we had to essentially issue mea culpas and say we were sorry and be good behavior from then on. But from the United States Senate, going to all those conferences. And by the way, when I was in the United States Senate, we would be sent business class international tickets. So I remember my tickets to Kenya or Bali. These were $15,000, $16,000 plus tickets for one United States Senate staffer. When I would go to Bali, we would stay at five-star resorts on the beach. They not only had multiple swimming pools and luaus every night with performances, and I'm talking about, it was like a Hawaiian resort. You can't imagine. This was for just basic Senate staffers to stay at. They also had not only hot tubs, but they had cold tubs. This was the latest in technology. And this was the 2007 UN Climate Summit in Bali, where, you know, even though George Bush was president at the time, he still rubber stamped every UN report, funded it, sent delegations, and essentially just, they would put in poison pills, but they still supported the whole process, never dared challenge the narrative. And that was always been my problem with Republicans. But you know, it was just an amazing amount of money to waste. That was one staffer. And then, of course, even CBS News a few years later did whole exposés on all the Senate staffers and their wives and going on all these trips to the government boondoggles. But I then switched over to Committee for Constructive Tomorrow after I left the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. And that's where we started ClimateDepot.com. CFACT, of course, had been around since the mid-80s, with founded by David Rothbard and Craig Rucker. David Rothbard had since passed on, and Craig Rucker now runs it. But that is who, it's CFACT's Climate Depot. And I think that has been a lot of fun. I started that in 2009, and that is essentially your daily news and information agency. And from there, I got to see the whole media landscape change over the last 12 years or so. Back in the late, you know, back even when I was in the U.S. Senate, or back when I was with Cybercast News Service, you could regularly go on CNN, MSNBC, ABC News. What I mean by is conservatives, climate skeptics were allowed. Any skeptics were allowed. They actually had debating shows. CNN was famous, of course, for Crossfire, where you actually debated issues. It may have been done in a kabuki theater way, but at least you had actual dissent. But I was able to get on all these shows. Everything changed when Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016. And what was interesting about that is I think the media literally looked at itself and said, we cannot allow this to ever happen again. We allowed these people our airwaves. We allowed them to talk. We allowed them on social media. This can happen no more. Anyone who is like Trump, forget Trump, but anyone who has any views even remotely similar has to be deplatformed, shut down, censored, and defunded. And that's what they started to do. When our first film, The Climate Hustle, came out in 2000, came out, actually, we had a sneak peek in 2015 in Paris, and then we released it in 2016. And we actually released it at the UN Paris conference. during that summit in December 2015. And it was such, they put out wanted pictures for me the morning of the premiere, which actually helped us because we ended up getting in the New York Times. They covered our premiere because of the wanted posters plastered with my face all over the streets of Paris during the UN summit, the UN Paris conference. And it said wanted for criminal du climat, for being a climate criminal. Well, the protesters showed up at our movie premiere for Climate Hustle in 2015 in Paris at an old movie theater and literally shut down our opening. We had to stop the whole opening for an hour. Police were called. They had to clear the streets out. And then we had an hour delay. And then, of course, we did something different. Instead of having Hollywood celebrities walk the red carpet for our premiere, we had aging scientists walk the red carpet. We had Fred Singer there, who was the dean of the climatologists and the skeptic. We had him there. We had Bob Carter. We had Patrick Moore. And we had them walk the red carpet on into the theater with photographers and the crowd of people waiting to get in. So it was a lot of fun. But essentially, these conferences serve as a great window in to what is to come. So I knew long before we ever had COVID lockdowns, I was at United Nations summits debating and watching presentations about degrowth movement and planned recessions to fight global warming. I got Ivo de Boer, a former UN chief, actually said the only way to meet the United Nations temperature goals for the planet on the climate would be to shut down the whole global economy. Bingo, bingo, bingo. Remember, I should get the name of that book I keep referring to. The 1980s book, Everything I Learned in Kindergarten, is exactly what happened. All I really need to know, I learned in kindergarten. And that's the name of the book I'm referring to. I think it was in 1990, but I think it was originally published 1986. All I really need to know, I learned during the climate debate. And that's exactly true when you're looking at everything you're seeing now, whether it's the transgender issue or critical race or defund the police or climate or COVID, public health. It's the same template, but I lived it during climate. So everything I'm seeing them do over and over with COVID, the shutting down and dissent, the deplatforming, I've literally seen it all long before it was even called a lot of the things, long before these tactics happened. So with Climate Depot, I do not only the daily news, but I also do regular speeches. I do interviews. I do this radio show. I also did, as I mentioned, the aforementioned Climate Hustle film 2016 release. We did a sequel with Kevin Sorbo, the actor, in 2020, which was released. We were set for almost 800 theater, double our first movie release. And we were the number one per screen average in the 2016 release at over 400 theaters nationwide and in Canada. And then we also had a European premiere. It showed at the European Parliament. We also had an Australian premiere a year later in 2017. So the movie has been seen around the world. The sequel, unfortunately, was released right when COVID hit. All the movie theaters were closed. So we ended up trying to release it on social media. And of course, that wasn't allowed to go well because they completely shut down advertising, promotion. And the funniest story about Climate Hustle series as it relates to big tech is our first film, being in 400 theaters, being the number one per screen average, had no problem making it to Amazon. In fact, we were covered on the Associated Press, Variety Magazine. We were covered in all the Hollywood press. We were reviewed. What happened in 2020 was we went to Amazon Prime, and they said, we'd like to submit this movie for you. And they were still selling our first movie and available for purchase and rent, The Climate Hustle. So in 2020, we went back to Amazon, said, hey, here's their sequel. Can you do this one too? They waited. Finally, we heard back that The Climate Hustle 2 violated Amazon's new content. It was a content violation, unquote. And that's what we were told. But not only were we told they would not air the new Climate Hustle 2 movie, they quietly, without notice, without telling us, removed the Climate Hustle film that they'd been having up for 4 years and doing very well on Amazon. So why did they do that? They did it because apparently by us alerting them that we had a sequel, whoever we alerted at Amazon and that sequel violated the content review, according to Amazon, they must have said, wait a minute, we're still showing their first movie, pull that. And they, of course, immediately pulled it without any fanfare. So just a funny thing. But what happened was, beginning with Donald Trump in 2016, it is now impossible for a climate skeptic. And this was something they had talked about for years, going back to this big 2007 New York City climate debate. It was impossible for any climate skeptic, anyone who challenged the narrative of the United Nations, of the Green New Deal style policies, of solar and wind mandates, to even get on mainstream media. And we had Scott Pelley, a CBS News anchor at the time, actually say, I wouldn't feature a climate skeptic on my program for the same reason I wouldn't feature a Holocaust denier on my program. He actually said climate denier, direct comparison to Holocaust denier. So this is what happened. They turn anyone who dissents from any narrative as evil, as not worthy of mention, compared directly to a Holocaust denier. So from there, our sequel came out, and now I'm happy to announce actually here today that on May 8th, 2022, we're having the international broadcast premiere of Climate Hustle 2 featuring Kevin Sorbo and myself as the climate reporter, released on Newsmax TV. And this will be the opening premiere, and then it'll air many times after that. And we hope to have a big brouhaha and release over it. But this is big news because it's the first time it's available on commercial TV, free for all. Newsmax not only is on cable systems all over the place, but it's also available on an app, free for, you know, no charge, no subscription broadcast of their broadcast. And also it's also available on websites. So this will be the international broadcast. We'll have more on that for next week's show on the Climate Hustle 2 broadcast premiere. But essentially, just to sum up, and we'll stop talking about biography, but I just wanted to give you a background of who I am. I come at this not as a scientist, even though I do occasionally play one on TV, debated Bill Nye multiple times, actually in two different television, once on CNN primetime on the old Piers Morgan show, another time on John Stossel's Fox Business show, Fox News Channel show. And then I interviewed Bill Nye in Central Park for my film Climate Hustle 2. And Bill Nye had his own camera crew, and then he was trying to be all combative during the interview. But essentially, Bill Nye, during that interview in Central Park, and it's in Climate Hustle 2, was open to the suggestion of jailing climate skeptics. Now, keep in mind, this was in 2016 that he did this. And this is long before, you know, Justin Trudeau was jailing the truckers or defunding them and deplatforming them. But this is what Bill Nye said, that he could see possibly jailing climate skeptics and fossil fuel executives because they were affecting his quality of life. So this is the mindset that essentially, I want to say, Donald Trump triggered in the media. This was something that had been going on, a trend that had been happening for at least a decade or more. The silence and censorship, at least in America, obviously this is a big part of progressives, is all about control every aspect of your life, including information and censorship. So I'm not saying it was new, but I'm saying Donald Trump presidency in the United States was the spark to where almost overnight, the censorship and deplatforming and shutting down of free speech began in earnest to prevent any future style of type of Donald Trump. So just to sum up, I'm an investigative journalist. I occasionally play a scientist on TV. I have a lot of fun at it, debating scientists. I also wrote the book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, which was originally released 2018, updated 2019 to include a bonus chapter on the Green New Deal. If you're looking for the most comprehensive coffee table book, if you will, on the climate crisis claims, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change is really an A to Z compendium, everything from children's indoctrination to polar bears to hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, droughts. Spoiler alert, no extreme weather events are increasing. They're either at no trend or declining trends on climate timescales of 30, 50, 100 years. I go into everything on sea level. I go into comparisons of the old witchcraft. I go in, most importantly, on the whole United Nations agenda. In other words, up until 1998, climate science didn't have a formal advocate pushing for it, for climate catastrophes. But in 1988, that all changed. The United Nations formed their climate panel. NASA scientist James Hansen testified in his alarmist testimony on Capitol Hill. The rest is history. The United Nations had a panel that literally was in charge of looking at whether CO2 caused a climate catastrophe. They had no incentive to ever find it didn't, because if they found out that CO2 didn't cause a climate catastrophe, they'd have no reason to exist. So not only did could they promote that CO2 was a climate catastrophe and have literally multiple meetings every single year, every year since at least 1990, all over the globe, including very exotic locations where they have carbon footprints bigger than most African nations do in a year for these two-week conferences. But they essentially are in charge of the solution. So they get to hype the problem, no incentive not to, and they get to hype the solution through the form of Copenhagen agreements and Kyoto and the UN Paris agreements. So this becomes, the United Nations Climate Panel becomes a self-interested lobbying organization. And that's what is so shocking. And guess what? And that's what I'm going to sort of morph into. We're going to go to break here. But when I come back, I'm going to tell you about how everything, again, I want to get that title right because I always botch it. All I really need to know, I learned in kindergarten. All I really need to know, I learned in the climate debate. They now, looking at how the climate crisis claims have been embedded in our pop culture, academia, government, education system, movies, and in our thought process, they now want to do the same for COVID. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. They want to have a, what even the Washington Post calls the radical COVID pandemic treaty. And that is what is probably the most frightening thing I've heard in a long time, because I've seen what happens. The problem with climate is they spent decades trying to scare people. If you go back to 1989, Gallup polling shows that literally there was no change in concern over all those years. Some ups and downs, you know, probably Al Gore's film comes out, it ticks up significantly, and then ClimateGate hits and it ticks down, concern over man-made global warming. You forget the polls that say, is global warming real? You know, is it, do you believe in global warming? Do you think it's happening? All nonsense. The climate's always changing. Do you believe in climate change? The most meaningless phrase. However, you look at people's concern, it hadn't changed. Climate activists knew this. They just couldn't get anywhere. So what did they do? They went after children. You can't convince an adult of your nonsense. Go after the kids. And they were very successful in many, many measures with kids, with the whole rise of Greta Thunberg, the whole rise of kids joining lawsuits, skipping school, blaming their parents for destroying the environment, the indoctrination and propaganda to them. But essentially, they still realized that climate wasn't going anywhere. COVID changed all that. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. This is the Mark Morano Show live on TNT Radio, the maiden voyage, April 30th, 2022. We'll be right back after this message.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Senator Ron Johnson is the only Wisconsin Republican to win a Senate race since Senator Robert Caston's win in 1986. And it's a blessing that he's there, as he's fought a battle of justice for the many people suffering serious adverse reactions following the COVID jabs. Democratic operatives, however, are keen to topple Senator Johnson and have put a target on the seat after he announced his re-election campaign in January. Democratic strategist Joe Zepecki has described Senator Johnson as a conspiracy theory-fueled crank, so expect some dirty politics in Wisconsin in the coming months. The primary election is scheduled for the 9th of August, and Mandela Barnes is the leading Democratic Party challenger. On the subject of vaccine mandates, Barnes has attempted to dodge the question. He's more interested in tackling a mythical climate crisis. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Everybody's terrified of cancer, the big C. They don't want to talk about embarrassing things, so blood in their bowel motions, going more frequently, a persistent cough, losing weight. I remember a wee man who didn't come to my surgery for ages, and all he would do was apologise and say, "Oh, sorry, doctor, I know if I had come, I know you'd have got me sorted." We are not too busy. We are very, very keen to see our patients as soon as we possibly can. So please don't get scared. Get checked.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police, fire, ambulance.
I can see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town.
Yeah, there it is. I can see flames. There appears to be a kid or something at the window.
Yes, okay.
You guys are better out. Serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind
and some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. The Mark Morano Show, maiden voyage, April 30th, 2022. Of course, if you're probably be listening to this on demand on the website or other places. So important to know, this is the pilot episode. And we are talking, I was talking about the COVID climate connection and how essentially everything I learned, all I really need to know, I learned during the climate debate. And so when it comes to the COVID debate, this is what exactly we're dealing with. I was just telling you beforehand how it's a self-interested lobbying organization, the United Nations, how they literally have a invested interest in promoting climate alarm, because not only do they get to promote it and have annual conferences with scientists from around the world and media, and then it helps them get grants and publishing and papers and just that whole cycle of self-importance, but they also get to come up with the solutions to the climate, alleged climate crisis. So it's an incredible deal. It's not like they come up with a report and then suddenly, you know, their role and it's done and they can move on and they've done their part and then they, you know, they go on to something else. No, this is self-perpetuating over decades. And that's what is so shocking about this entire climate change debate, is there's no measure, metric, or way that you could ever say, well, we've solved the climate debate, it's over, let's move on. But yet every time they lobby us, if we could just do this, then we could save the climate. And when they actually pass things like Copenhagen, UN Paris Climate Pact 2015, they herald it as the moment that future generations will remember, we've solved the climate, this is it, we've done it, patting each other on the back. And then within a year, they're claiming we have to save the planet all over again. It's all so confusing. There's never a measure by which they say, okay, we've done it, now we can move on to something else. Well, COVID may have changed that. So here's what's going on. And this is important to really understand here. Even the Washington Post is calling this. Here's the Washington Post headline. Countries mull a radical pandemic treaty, in quotes. The Washington Post headline calls this radical. Why should we be cared? Just sounds like more bureaucracy. The World Health Organization is seeking greater powers via an international treaty to give the WHO the power to censor health information worldwide. That's a small part of it, as bad as that sounds. But it's going to give the WHO, if a country signs on to it, say the United States, say UK, say France, say Australia, if you sign on to this, that means we get rid of outlier states, areas, and countries. No more Swedens, no more Ron DeSantis in Florida, no more anyone bucking the system. Because if you're signed on to this, you're essentially ceding over your future economy, decisions, life to World Health Organization bureaucrats. Who's the biggest donor to the World Health Organization? Biggest single donor? Bill Gates. Who does he put up as the best country's response to COVID and the way every country should follow suit in the future? Gee, you know what? Bill Gates is the largest single donor to the World Health Organization. Greatest example for the future, Australia. He believes the country that had the most tyrannical response to COVID-19 with quarantine camps, using the military, endless lockdowns, any kind of contact tracing, any kind of weird contact, you would be locked up against your will. People literally had their lives destroyed, their mental health. The worst of all scenarios, Australia became a dystopian vision of the former prison colony, which it descended. That is who Bill Gates wants you to follow. So this pandemic treaty, the idea of this is to come in and just have this uniform response all across the world. The World Health declares a virus emergency, a new variant of COVID is out, you know, code red or whatever phrases they come up with, an instant lockdown. It's not going to matter who your governor is, who your member of parliament is, who your prime minister is, who your president is, who your mayor is. If you want a mayor of the bucket, it's going to be, it could matter, but it's not going to matter as much, because you're going to have the forces of international powers in your country signing on to this treaty, taking over for this giant uniform response, a la Shanghai, if they want to. And I don't know why they don't want to. That's the most amazing thing, what's happening in Shanghai. I can't understand why any media, they're trying to mostly ignore it, but that's exactly the end result of all the COVID lockdowns that we went through. So I'll have much more on COVID in future episodes, but That's one of the things I'm writing about in the book, The Great Reset, is this merging of COVID and climate. Because what's happening, and you can see this with the pandemic treaty, is climate is going to be part of that. Climate is not strong enough as an issue, as a political issue, as a fear issue for the progressive agenda or for the elite agenda, for the Davos agenda, to work on its own. So what could they possibly do? What could we possibly do with climate to make it sexier, scarier? Remember, 100 years of at least since the Spanish flu, one of the lessons of pandemic public health policy was to keep everyone calm, to keep everyone rationed and reason and not create a panic. What happened in COVID? Public health, led by World Health Organization, Anthony Fauci, the CDC, decided that panic and terrorism was the only way to go. So the absolute terror, stay in your home, lockdowns, giving people power that you couldn't even imagine they had before, stay-at-home orders, curfews, no more weddings, no more funerals. If you had a backyard barbecue, your neighbors could turn you in. You could have your water and your heat, utilities shut off. This just odd. The climate activists were in awe. And I did multiple special reports. This is all in my new book, The Great Reset, coming up. And it's also in Green Fraud. I touch on this in Green Fraud. I have two chapters on the COVID climate connection. But essentially, they were awed, climate activists, at how fast all the things that they had been hoping for happened literally overnight. They saw essentially the Green New Deal installed overnight in all these countries across the world. Stay-at-home orders, economic degrowth and planned recessions, complete limits on your personal movement, which has always been a big moment of the climate agenda. Instead of skipping school for a day like Greta Thunberg wanted, kids were out of school for some of them up to 2 years. It was the climate activist dream. John Kerry actually said at the time, COVID and climate, the parallels are screaming at us. This is what happened. So right now, the big thing, and if you go to Climate Depot, what I'm covering and what's going to be in my new book, they're merging climate and COVID. Climate is now going to become only a subset of a larger issue, which is going to be remaining viruses, because there's no way. Climate just never became more than a Democratic, generally a liberal, progressive issue of concern. Viruses scared everyone. It cut across ideological party lines, and the deep state, if you will, is never going to forget that. So the headline at Climate Depot here right now for this week is climate change will make pandemics like COVID more likely. And it's, of course, it's a wild speculative modeling thing, but here's the gist of it. They're saying that because of allegedly, you know, their temperature models of the year 2070, climate change could easily become the dominant driver of cross-species virus transmission. And so what they're saying is unchecked climate change will lead to unchecked viruses. In other words, if you don't support the UN Paris Agreement or the Green New Deal, you're a grandma killer because you're going to cause viruses. And it's not just grandma killing. There's pictures and headlines of kids sick because it's going to hurt children. We're going to have unchecked viruses. So in other words, if you're an evil climate denier, you're also an evil virus denier who's going to kill people. And your climate denial has public health consequences. It's misinformation and disinformation. So this is just exactly what we are dealing with in this world in which we live in terms of the climate agenda and the COVID agenda. And that's why this book I have, The Great Reset, literally is going to lay out this case. And here's one of the things what I do when I write, when I try to talk, I like to quote as mainstream a publication, establishment, and corporate as possible. So when I write my book, The Great Reset, and I'm going to go through and also Green Fraud, when I mentioned that Bill Gates is America's largest farm owner, it's not a fact that's in, wait a minute, what did he cite? Some oil-funded or some agricultural, you know, blog of someone who's against Bill Gates owning any farmland? No, I cited NBC News. When I talk about some of the COVID misinformation debunking, am I citing, you know, some, you know, COVID denier blog? No, I'm citing USA Today newspaper. I'm citing the BBC. So all this information you can find, and that's as an investigative journalist, that's what I try to do, because I like to have when I make a point, I like it to be beyond dispute from the person, not the person. I don't want the person scratching their head. Oh, where do you get that information? I usually put it right into the copy so that I can just move on and get these people. And of course, my books are meticulously footnoted. I believe the original one had over 1,000 politically incorrect. I can't remember the number on that, but these are pages and pages of footnotes. I document every single claim, and there's a lot to document. But I was going to show you a couple things here. The biggest thing that's happened in this climate and COVID debate is just how the public has been so accepting of the narratives of not pushing back. And that is one of the biggest things that concerned me. So in this book, I devote a chapter to people, and it's essentially to how people can fight back. And one of the analogies I use is in 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell in East Germany. It didn't fall because the East German government said, you know, these people have been oppressed first, with Hitler, then under Stalin and the Russians. But we have to figure out a way to let them have their freedom finally. It didn't happen. The East German government didn't just say, well, we'll give them their freedom because, you know, they've been repressed by the Soviets this many years. No, instead, the people no longer gave their consent for tyranny, and they resisted. And I think that's what we saw here in America, particularly with, we had one county in one state of Virginia where the parents fought back at the school board level, and they literally heard the shot heard around the world against the masking of kids and a couple other hot button issues. That led to a shocking defeat of a major Democratic Party operative, Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, Republican governor. Same thing almost happened in New Jersey. Democrats then did all this internal focus polling to find out that even their own Democratic base didn't want to live this way under COVID lockdowns. And so immediately the science changed. That was what was announced. CNN announced the science has changed. No more masking of kids, no more lockdowns, no more vaccine mandates. But what actually changed, the science didn't change, the political science changed. And that is how you effectuate change. Because I try not to be all gloom and doom, although at many points when you read this book, The Great Reset, you'll want to gouge your eyes out and give up. And I won't blame you, but there is hope. But I was going to play for you one of the things change I did was a Murano Minute a while ago, but on the COVID climate connection. And I wanted to show you how they want to now add climate change to the death certificates as a cause of death. So I'm going to go ahead and play this audio, and you'll hear this clip here. This is from a segment.
Are you ready for daily and annual climate change death tolls? Well, you better be. Adding climate change to death certificates is now a thing. Wait until you see this. Climate change is featured on CNN with daily death tolls. And why not? Bill Gates has warned that the death toll from climate change will be much, much greater than we've seen with COVID-19. And of course, Al Gore says every organ of your body will be affected by climate change. The American Cancer Society notes that climate change is already increasing your cancer risk. And the Obama administration has claimed that climate change will cause an increase in fatal car accidents. Get ready. Cause of death, climate change coming.
And that is literally what. Now, following up on that, we had a doctor who did the first case, first clinically diagnosed case of climate change. And this was a doctor in Canada, head of the emergency department, major hospital. Again, not some obscure, activist, med student or something. A lady suffering from heat stroke, he put on her chart, he penned the words climate change. So you will be able to be diagnosed, have suffered from the condition of climate change, and you will die of it and have it noted on your death certificate. So this is the full merging of COVID and climate. Well, my hour has flown by here. I want to thank you all for listening to the broadcast premiere of climate. Climate Depot is my website, but the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. And I will tell you once again that on May 8th, the broadcast premiere of Climate Hustle 2 is coming out. Next week, we are going to be integrating all sorts of audio and sound bites. I will be doing a survey of the news that will knock your socks off. And we're going to have regular segments on this show, COVID tyranny updates, the wacky world of climate, the Republican Party sucks, energy reality check, the Great Reset Weekly, child propaganda upset, stay at home, transportation issues. We're going to have a whole section on how it's freedom of movement. This is what COVID and climate are going after. They want to make seaside vacations the realm of only the very wealthy. So this has been the Mark Morano Show, the very first show. And I welcome you to continue listening. We'll be back next week. This is TNT Radio. Thank you for listening. God bless all of you, and keep fighting and resisting. Don't accept the narratives.